Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's O'Neill Outside on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. For fishing and hunting or anything in the great outdoors, O'Neill Williams is your guide. Let's go outside with O'Neill.
Good morning, boys and girls from high in the mountains in North Georgia in the Bojangles studio. This is O'Neill Outside. Welcome to a brand new unused Saturday morning. Well, we've a little firestorm here about baiting for white-tailed deer. We have a lot of callers, so I'm going to forego all the self-promotion other than if you'll visit O'Neill Outside. Let me show it to you again on the Facebook. Here's the book. It's called O'Neill Outside. 65 years in the outdoors, people and places along the way. Visit O'Neill Outside. Click on the book cover and you can order it. Special pricing at $14.99, and it's a great book. It's not a how-to, but it's a great book, I think. I know you'll enjoy it. We're talking about today the baiting of white-tailed deer in the northern zone of Georgia. I have Jam on the line right now. Good morning.
Good morning.
What do you think?
Okay. Well, I agree with you. I do agree with you about the baiting. Okay. I don't think it's a good idea. And I'm not a deer hunter. Mm-hmm. I love them. And my question for you, O'Neill, we live in the city limits of Marietta. Okay. And not in a subdivision, but an old-fashioned neighborhood, lots of woods, you know, mm-hmm. plenty of space between the houses. And we've had literally generations of deer grow up in our woods. I've watched, you know, babies come up into adults. I put corn out for them at night. And my question for you, obviously we're not hunting them. Mm-hmm. Am I hurting them doing that? I worry about them having enough food, especially in the colder months, you know, when there's not as much greenery around. Am I hurting them?
No, but you don't need to do that. You're changing their habits, and the feeding of eating corn is not good for their dental structure. I understand.
Okay.
They will be just fine without you doing that. The
okay.
only thing I would might suggest is that if you put in a little food plot, just a little place, you know, 10 by 10, 10 by 20, it's
okay.
more fun than watching them munch on deer, munch on corn.
Okay.
I appreciate your effort, but, you know, look up and telephone the Whitetail Institute.
Okay.
There's a real live person there. And
okay.
they will tell you there's some no-plow seeds, food plot
All right.
seeds. All you have to
okay.
do is scatter it in the yard. You don't have to plow.
That'd be great.
Or anything of that nature. Yes, ma'am. Get
right.
Woman Williams.
I just wondered, what about she could put a salt block out? Would that be good or
well,
not?
It's just a mineral block, but that's
okay.
It is
okay because I put a mineral block out for them. Is
Ooh,
that okay?
I missed my break here. Jam, you know, thank you for calling. I got so wrapped up in the subject matter, I've overstepped myself, but I'm going to put you back on hold right now, and this is O'Neill. I'll be back. Back 12 after the hour, we're in the midst of some discussions here on O'Neill Outside about the baiting of deer in Georgia, and we can handle that baiting of subject across other states also. I was in the midst of a conversation with Jam about that. Jam, I would just tell you, and thank you for calling. Telephone the Whitetail Institute. They have some things that you can throw out in the backyard that will grow that you don't have to plow, and it helps feed the deer. But more than anything, if you're still there,
yes,
those deer will be just fine without you feeding them at all.
Okay. All right. Now, a mineral block, I know your wife is mentioning that. I put mm-hmm. one out. Is that okay?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah, it's made with berries and all this
yes.
stuff that they... Okay, good. All right, I don't want to hurt them. That's my thing. And, you know, but I do agree with the the baiting issue as far as the hunters are concerned.
I appreciate you taking the time to call.
Well, you make my Saturday morning. I'm on the road every Saturday down to South Georgia, and you're my first 2 hours.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have a great
weekend.
You're
very kind. Be safe, please. All right, next, Craig is calling on O'Neill outside. Good morning, Craig. Craig, you're on the radio.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm clicking the wrong buttons here, Craig. Glad to hear from you. What you got on your mind?
Well, I feel very awkward calling because I'm not an outdoorsman at all.
That's all right.
I'm an early riser, and I enjoy your show frequently. So I had two things to say.
Okay.
I agree with like 99% of what you say, but did I hear you say you were hunting in Texas over a baited station? That raised a question.
I did. That was quite a long time ago, probably 20 years.
Okay.
And I was a guest on the property. I was a guest, and I didn't have any other place to go except that. But I haven't done so since, and I didn't take a deer over that in that area also.
Okay. And the other is, since I'm not an outdoorsman, I have lost a loved one to a deer accident on the highway. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, you know, in the back of my mind, fewer deer on the highways is not a bad idea for me.
Fewer deer on the highway?
Yeah, I mean, you know, cutting down on the deer population maybe would save human lives in car accidents, you know?
Well... It's not the population as much as that's a certain time of the year. So if you had, even if you had fewer deer, you're still going to see plenty of them on the highway because they are in the rut mode, and so they are extremely active. I don't think that the reduction of the whitetail herd, it would have to be so significant to be effective with regards accidents on the highway. It would be negligible. But you can't blame hunters or the deer for that. So there you are.
No, I understand. I would just state. And the third thing, the lady that called earlier, feeding the deer corn. I'm a dentist, and I think I may have a new specialty. If she'll keep doing that, I'll be a specialist for dentures for deers. How's that?
Good idea. I love entrepreneurship. You can be the deer doctor.
If she keeps feeding them, I'll be a denture deer specialist.
Okay. That's a good idea. I expect to see some internet ads on that behalf. There you go. Now let's talk also to Charles is calling on line number 3. Good morning, Charles. It's O'Neill outside. Welcome.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
No problem. Look, I had a different spin on the thought of that. I own property in the southern zone in Harris County.
Okay.
I have, for many, many years, had a supplemental year-round feeding program there on my farm.
Uh-huh.
I also plant a good bit of acreage every year. And before the change of the laws in the southern zone, my sons and I were technically hunting illegal. Now I never allow the hunting over these supplemental feed sites. And just to give you, last year I fed 17 tons of this particular feed there on my farm.
Okay.
And like I said, that was 12 months out of the year. We have reaped the benefits as far as the size and the quality of our deer herd from that.
Okay.
I was just throwing that out there. I grew up in Southwest Alabama. We did anything that was unethical is how I was raised to hunt. I am so glad I'm not that way anymore. And I would never teach my children in that direction. But anyway, that was my thoughts.
We're going to split hairs for a minute, but I'm going to suggest that we look at it this way. What you're doing, supplemental feeding, is a bit different from hunting over feed.
I agree. The point I was making was before, it would still make my property illegal with me having that supplemental feed, if you follow what I'm saying.
Yes, I do.
But anyway.
Good point, sir. Good point.
You have a great day.
You too, pal. I appreciate you calling. You bet.
Yes, sir.
That's very, very, very well done. Okay. Let's see. It's 17 after the hour. Yes, ma'am.
Just want to revisit something for a second.
All right.
Back to the when you were hunting in Texas, and you said you were you hunted over some corn or something. It was legal in Texas to do that.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
I think you need to, because how it goes on the internet. Next thing you know, everybody's going to be saying, O'Neill was hunting over bait, you know, and that was not
fact,
the Can I finish?
Please.
Thank you. Well, I forgot what I was going to say. You interrupted my chain of thought. Oh, heck. Yeah, well, anyway, I just wanted you to make that clear that you were with an outfitter and it was legal to do so, and even though you did so, you still didn't get a deer, so there you go.
Never
you weren't doing anything
one.
Illegal. You know how to make that point.
I never even saw a deer during that, but yes.
It was
it
legal.
It was quite legal.
Okay.
Quite legal.
I just wanted
quite
to be...
an acceptable practice.
Okay, I just...
You bet. Okay, now let's chat here now with Mac is calling with the Ram Fishing Report. Mac, good morning.
Absolutely. How are you doing this morning, O'Neill?
Lovely. I'm trying to manage the time rather poorly here, but we have new gear. So what's going on at Lake Lanier, and is it time to start fishing deep?
We're in that transition, O'Neill. That's a great question because we go through this every year before it really gets to summer, before fish get to summer, let's say it like that, before they move into their summer deep water places. We're transitioning into that now. So if you're going today and not just here, if you're on other lakes, you need to be thinking this way. Water temperatures are around 80 in most of our southern impoundments, and that's the point where we start getting thermocline set up. That's the point where we move to deeper water, more open water, and you'll start seeing some fish move towards creek channels and river channels. They're scattered out really badly on the near, and when our lake came up like it did a couple weeks ago, that seemed to scatter them.
Well,
and, that was a lot of water quickly, and now we're going the other way. The Corps is working hard to get that water out of there to get us back to normal full pool level. So now we've dropped a foot and a half roughly in the last week, so a lot of change, and I think that's really scattered them out. So you have to, the problem we're having here on Lanier, a lot of times you'll catch one, maybe two, and then they scatter and you got to move. It's constant
that's
moving.
Right.
Can't find them really bunched up.
All the lakes across the south from Texas all the way to Virginia are all over full.
Everybody's got plenty of water.
Good.
It is good. Other than, you know, when lakes come up, I'm convinced most time when a lake, and we saw the bass do this, this is something else I was going to mention. When the lake came up and when it topped out, the bass went and got real shallow. When lakes rise, they'll tend to rise with it and go shallow. If they can get the park bench, they will. If they can get under a picnic table, if it's flooded, that's where they'll go. Of course, now that's ending because they're pulling the lake so quick, and the amount of flooded cover is going to decrease. And as the lake falls, I think they tend to pull back down. So, but they're doing the same. Think if you're going bass fishing, maybe early, or if you're fishing at night, we're getting a good night bite. During the day, think main lake brush, 15 to 30 feet. But at night, you can get your crankbaits out. A big, we use the big bumper baits, what a lot of people call them, where you've got a spinnerbait with a big single, maybe a double, but a single Colorado bait, big one. It really moves a lot of water. That pattern's really good at night. They'll catch some really big spotted bass.
That's a lot of fun, too. Matter of fact, I'm going to have to go now, but let's make a point next week to talk about that, because that's something I used to do years ago and is very effective. And I need a lesson and remind our audience about that. Want to?
I'll make a note, and we'll just pick right up where we left off today. How about that?
You bet. Thanks, Mac.
Yep, everybody be safe. Have a good day.
You bet. See you later. This is O'Neill. We'll be back with the Silent Hero when we return.
Ha!
2018 Silent Hero Award. A firefighter who was part of a crew that saved two workers from the side of a high-rise building said he had to overcome his own fear of heights to assist in the rescue. Jacksonville Fire Department firefighter Rick Snyder responded to his first high-rise rescue when two waterproofers, I guess they were window washers, became stuck on the side of the skyscraper. He said, "I just grabbed as much gear as I could, rope, rigging, bags, and headed to the roof. They looked like two insects hanging there. All you saw was their boots dangling. A million emotions are running all over you," he said, "and that's what we do. We fall back on our training to suppress that and just do the job." Snyder secured the dangling scaffolding to the building so it wouldn't fall. Then he credited his other colleagues, other firefighters, for keeping everyone safe in the rescue. They were manually holding the lines. Those guys were hanging over the building, held by partner firefighters. The two workers were brought to safety to the ground by the firefighters.
That's terrifying on many levels.
You bet it is.
Whoa.
Silent heroes, and you heard it right here. 26 after the hour. Let's talk now to Alan is calling about deer baiting. And now let me do the correct click on here. There's Alan, and he's calling on O'Neill outside. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, O'Neill.
What do you say?
I have a little bit different take on the deer baiting issue.
Okay, let me hear about it.
I have family that lives in the lower part of South Carolina where deer baiting has been legal for years.
Yes.
And I have hunted over bait, and I honestly have mixed feelings about it. People worry about chronic wasting disease and other diseases. I don't see the deer congregating as much as people, you know, seem to think they will.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I also think that hunters are going to be disappointed with the deer harvest. You know, I think they're going to pour a lot of money into it, and I think they're going to be disappointed in the long term. The first year they may kill more and bigger bucks, but over time the bucks become they become smarter about it, and they tend to stay away from the food plots or the feed stations, except in the middle of the night.
That's one of the effects of deer baiting.
And over time you will shoot does and small bucks over the bait, but the big bucks tend to stay away. The only time you might catch one is at the very first week of the season, but once they hear a little bit of shooting, they revert to that nocturnal pattern, and you just don't do very good over bait.
Well, yes, indeed. You have identified one of the downsides, because it changes the deer habits. The bucks come in at night, they feed on the corn, and they change their feeding habits, if you will. And I still think even over corn, you rarely shoot the big buck.
I rarely
shoot the herd buck.
I agree.
So
if you want to take a young deer or a doe, corn or other bait will work. And, you know, but if you're truly hunting for a quality deer, I don't think the hunters are going to. I don't think they're going to be happy with the results over the long run.
I do appreciate your input. It's very well thought out.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You bet. You too. There you are. There's a good a view. All right. Hey, let's talk to Hank the Yank. We're talking about fly fishing here at 29 after the hour.
Well, let me tell you, I'm going carping today. While the rivers are raging, I'm going carping. I'm going to go take a look down at Bull Spruce for our first trip. Yeah, it's, you know, they're generating 24/7.
Uh-huh.
So it'll be interesting to see what the river's going to look like. But we're going to go down there and take a peek at it. It'll be our first carp trip of the year. So
good.
That's what we're planning on doing. You know, you cannot fish the river if you're a trout fisherman, because they're just generating too much. You're just going to have to wait. You're going to have to fish Lanier, which for a fly fisherman right now is fishing very poor. So that's all I'm going to give you as far as, and the rivers are coming down a little bit in North Georgia. Our buddies in Unicoi Outfitters started doing shoal bash trips again way up the Hooch, and they said the rivers are coming down and they're starting to catch some fish.
Good.
But O'Neill, I want to make a quick switch on this call. I want to talk to you about this deer baiting. I'm going to give you a guide's perspective and just relate this a little bit differently and see what you think.
Okay, please.
As a fishing guide, there are places in North Georgia where we bait the trout. We feed big trout for people to come and catch. There are baited stations to keep those trout in those lies so that folks can come up and catch those trout. And I will tell you, as not being a hunter, but having spoke to hundreds and hundreds of anglers, while it is an enjoyable, once they've tried it, they do it once, most regular anglers, and I'm talking about guys that like to fish, guys and gals that are fairly serious fishermen, will not go back and fish these baited places where we bait the trout because they just feel the challenge is not there to catch those big fish. Now, I don't know if you can relate that to deer, but I'm going to let you take over from here and just give you a different perspective on that.
That's a good idea. I appreciate that. And you are correct. And that has already taken place for the hunter in North Georgia. That's why I can't figure out what's the upside to making the northern zone in Georgia baitable.
Yeah, unless there's just too many deer and they feel that you'll be able to, you know, wean through the stocks a little quicker if they're getting out of control. Maybe that's a reason. I don't know.
All right. Well, let me comment, and that's this. If the Department of Natural Resources, the Wildlife Resources Division, said, O'Neill, we're going to bait in North Georgia because it's a good idea for the deer and the habitat and our overall population, we think it's a good idea to bait, then I would say, okay, let's do, because you are a scientist, you look at things long term, and then it's all right with me. But when they say no, but yet there's a executive order from the governor's office to change it, then I'm against it.
Yeah. I hear you. I just think from a long-term perspective, most serious deer hunters would have a similar take on their hunting. I have friends that hunt all over up in New York State, and they love hunting with a bow. Mm-hmm. And these guys are real serious guys, and none of them would ever fish. You know, would never hunt over a baited area. They want to go and it's the idea. It's almost like going flats fishing where you're hunting for fish in shallow water. It's the challenge of putting in the time, going through the hunt, and doing it the more challenging way, the more natural way. And I think that most serious folks would probably, I would tend to think hunters would probably feel the same way.
And they do.
All right,
and
buddy.
They do most of the time.
It's a really great subject this morning, and just loved listening to it while I was in bed waking up.
Good deal. Glad you called, pal.
All right, buddy.
Have a good weekend. I'll see you soon. There you are. And let's try now for, let's speak to Dan on O'Neill Outside. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, O'Neill. I really enjoy your show. I'm kind of a transplant, just come down here to Georgia about 3 years ago and trying out your hunting. I'm from Illinois. So in Illinois, we have quite a few restrictions up there. We can't bait. We can't use rifles. So most of my hunting was bow hunting. But on the baiting situation, just I think the last caller was saying, I enjoy the competition of going out there doing the scouting. Not sitting there over a pile of bait waiting for something to come into me to shoot them. I like the whole going out there, looking at the woods, looking at the signs that are out there, finding me a place to set up and doing my hunting. I've killed quite a few large deers in Illinois just by going out to the woods and looking at the lay of the land and where the deer are moving to get my deer versus putting out a pile of bait and shooting that. It's the same thing with fishing. You don't know where the fish are. You got to go out there and find where the fish are.
Exactly right.
If you just sit there and bait the fish, that's really not fishing. All you're doing is picking up food.
That's right. All you have to do is just go to the grocery store if you want to do that.
I agree very much.
Good deal. Hey, I'm glad you called. It gives us a different perspective. Even though you live here now, that you've hunted in Illinois, right?
That is right. It's a big challenge coming down to Georgia versus where I was from.
I see. I agree. I hunted there, and we hunted out of stands, but there was no food. There was a little bit of a food plot, but there was no deer, no baiting, nothing of any kind. It was a deer stand in the woods.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the way we die. I had a climber. I'd go out there with my climber. Like mm-hmm. I said, in Illinois, all you could use is a shotgun or a bow. So it's a little bit more challenging there. But the whole premise of, to me, as I was brought up by my father, was go out there, look at the signs, figure out where the deer are moving from their food plots to their bedding, you know, where they're bedding at, and then that's what you call hunting to me.
That's and that's they will show you where they are. Dan, I got to go, pal. Thanks for listening and thanks for calling. This is O'Neill with O'Neill Outside. Everybody hold on. We'll be back.
Honor, courage, and strength of character. These qualities are embodied by the recipients of the Medal of Honor. Now let's recognize this week's Medal of Honor recipient on O'Neill Outside.
Louis Sabille, Major, Air Force, Korea, August 1950. During an attack on a camouflaged area containing a concentration of enemy troops, artillery, and armored vehicles, Major Sabille's F-51 aircraft was severely damaged by anti-aircraft fire. Although fully aware of the short period he could remain airborne, he deliberately ignored the possibility of survival by abandoning the aircraft or by crash landing. He continued his attack against the enemy forces, threatening the security of the friendly ground troops. In his determination to inflict maximum damage upon the enemy, Major Sabille again and again exposed himself to the intense fire of the enemy gun batteries and dived on the targets to his death. The superior leadership, daring, and selfless devotion to duty which he displayed in the execution of an extremely dangerous mission were an inspiration to both his subordinates and his superiors, and reflect to the highest credit upon himself, the U.S. Air Force, and the Armed Forces of the United States. Medal of Honor tribute to Louis Sabille, Major, Air Force, Korea, 1950. He knew he was going to die.
It's a real hero right there.
Yeah. All right, 41 after the hour. Let's talk now to Mark is calling. Always enjoy hearing from Mark on O'Neill Outside. Good morning, Mark. I think I'm clicking the wrong thing. Now I've got Mark, I believe. Good morning, Mark. What
Oh, not a whole lot. How are y'all this morning?
Good today. I'm finally learning how to use some of our gear here. So, how's it going for you, sir? Where are you headed today?
I am headed to Doughboy Sound to go Spanish mackerel fishing, and there's been a few kingfish mixed in with them up there, but this time of year, I think you know Wendell Harper, right? There
I do, indeed. You're a nice guy.
Yeah. They've been whacking the big Spanish just right outside of Buttermilk Sound, really, into Doughboy Sound. Fish are averaging 3 to 4 pounds, if you know anything about
Spanish.
Oh,
my goodness. 4 pounds Spanish? My goodness. That's huge.
Well, they're back up again this summer. Last summer, we were coming up and being limited out by 11 o'clock, and then back at Mudcat Charlie's, they're catching 228 on St. Simon's and eating lots by 12:30, just about every Saturday. And almost enough to spoil you.
I gotcha.
Yeah. But, hey, you're talking about deer baiting.
Yes, sir.
Got another perspective.
Okay.
It's been legal down here in South Georgia for a little while now, several years anyway, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And one of the luxuries that I've noticed about it being legal is when I'm hunting a property, especially one of my own properties that has food plots and supplemental feed stations, is that I do not have to take them down. Doesn't necessarily mean that I have to go sit on them and hunt them like I'm hunting a corn pile.
Right.
But I no longer have to worry about, A, where I'm sitting. If I'm too close, then I'm going to have a game warden come out and measure exactly where I'm at in relation to my feeders.
Mm-hmm.
And, B, I don't have to take them out of the woods. I can leave them and allow the benefit that you get from supplemental feeding combined with food plots year-round. And I don't have to worry about being compliant with the law. Now, that's nice. That really is nice because since it's been legal down here, we don't have to take our fingers out of the woods anymore.
Good idea. So I think
year-round. If you're going to do it, do it year-round. Do it not to just date deer to be able to shoot deer over a corn pile. That's not really very sporting. If you're going to use feeders, make sure that they are supplemental to a plan to take care of your deer and that you do it year-round.
That's a good feed view, them, Mark.
Feed them protein supplements. You know, make sure that you have good, clean feed in there all the time. Don't get any old moldy junk. You know, maintain them. Take care of them. It's part of taking care of your deer herd if it's integrated into a plan to take care of your property. Now, as far as just going out and throwing 100 pounds of corn on the ground so you can just kill a deer, that's not really hunting. But that's just my perspective.
It's a good perspective and one I hadn't heard this morning. You finally tuned that, and it makes sense.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good day. I'm fixing to go breathe some salt air and get some fish.
All right, mighty fine. I'll see you soon, pal. There we go. All right, 404-872-0750-800-972-8255. I need to really... honey, if you can use my phone, if you will telephone, text Mike, and you can give Mike the telephone number because we're going to expect a call from him pretty soon, and I don't think the old number is going to work for him.
He should be able to come through on...
Just call on the regular line, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's just do that. He's a 404-872-0750-800-972-8255. You got anything coming up on Facebook about our subject matter this morning?
A few things. Let's see. Let's try
now
that.
Can you hear me now?
Gotcha. Okay. Michael says, it's not an argument for baiting, but if a person sits over a bait pile... is a shooter, not a hunter, then a person who drives to another state and pays a guide to take him out to sit in a stand over a food plot is just a shooter with more money.
Well, he's responding to my...
And we tried to explain that. Yeah. Hello.
I can't explain, you know, I gave enough of an explanation. I was a guest at a ranch. Mm-hmm. And come to think of it, I think it was a food plot and not a corn feeder.
Yeah.
I know it was no feeder.
Yeah.
But it was a food plot. I never saw another deer while I was there in 3 days because it had rained so much. The natural browse was enough that the deer stayed away.
Yeah. And
I should not have said that. And if you take offense that I did that, this must have been close to 20 years ago or more.
Yeah. Probably more than that.
Maybe I didn't know enough. I'm sorry. Okay.
But it was legal. It was legal.
Oh, yeah. It was absolutely legal. Yeah. And it's legal in Georgia to do the same thing now.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't get and what we're talking about here is that it's been expanded to North Georgia.
But not
without
South
reason that I know of. You can bait in North Georgia outside of the wildlife management areas. And I don't know why it was changed. My issue is, so far as I know, in Georgia, the Department of Natural Resources, those scientists, those biologists of the Wildlife Resources Division, 3 times over 3 different years when the issue was brought up before the legislature, they said, no, we should not do that. Then an executive order was given to change it. Don't know why.
Well, maybe Steve Birch would know. You know, he's down there at the Capitol a lot and knows a lot that's going on. Yeah.
Birch would be a good person to talk about
to explain that. Boy, all the phones lit up all of a sudden, didn't they?
This is an important issue.
Yeah.
If I can get my glasses, I can tell who's calling. All right, let's talk to Jim. Jim is calling from Monroe, Georgia, I believe. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, sir. It's a pleasure to talk to you and Lady Williams again. What I'd like to say is this. I am against baiting. Mm-hmm. The only thing I can think of, a negative, is this. is plus the others, but an added negative, which has not been spoken yet.
Okay.
And that is also that you're going to bring in predators to where they know the deer come and make it much easier as a predation. The other thing, in North Georgia, we do not have the agriculture which they have in South Georgia. So that's another negative that, you know, I can't see. The only other thing I can think of is the insurance companies have raised so much holy sand about paying out premiums for some deer accidents that's worth who they played over to.
Could be. I don't know. No, I like I said, I tell you know, the governor's office. I'm a tax-paying citizen. I thought my call to the governor's office was worthwhile. I did not get an answer. I did not.
Unfortunately, that's the way a lot of our elected officials are treating us now, Mr. O'Neill.
It would appear so. That's a good perspective, sir. I appreciate you, as always, listening to the show and taking the time to call.
Thank you very much. Y'all have a good weekend.
You too, pal. There you go. There's Black. Hey, let's talk to Black for a second. See you there, my good friend. Did you get your hat?
Old Neil had come last Saturday.
Good.
Boy, it is pretty. My wife gave me a direct order. She said, now, Dad, do not wear that hat outside and get it all sweaty and dirty.
You can use it as a trophy.
Yes, she said use it on special occasions. So listen,
I'm glad you enjoyed it. It's my pleasure to send it to you.
It was so wonderful. But listen, I was asking Jason, you had a hero to call you from my hometown last Saturday or the Saturday before. His name was William.
Uh-huh.
But
oh.
Jason tried to pull it up on your what you call him, but he didn't have no last name.
Okay.
So I was trying to find out who he was. All I know is William.
And you
don't know his last name. He's supposed to call you back, right?
Oh, well, good. We'll wait for his call.
Okay, listen, what time is the get together at the Governor's Hunting Club next Saturday?
2 o'clock.
2 until?
2 o'clock. I'll be there for 3 or 4 hours.
So
the Governor's Gun Club in Kennesaw. You bet. I'll be in there shooting the shotgun. You come on in there with me, Black.
Listen, let me tell you something right quick. My wife fell off the bed this morning, 2 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
Man, she hurt herself.
I thought that was, going to be a fun call. Black, I got to go, pal. I've stacked up with calls here. 52 after the hour, and let's see, it's 52:22. I've got a minute. This might be interesting. This is John calling. Quickly, John, what's going on?
Yeah, good morning. I'm not much of a hunter, but I was just trying to figure out the difference between a supplemental food plot and a bait area.
Okay, well, the food plot is more natural food. It lasts year round, and the deer don't come to the sound of a feeder. It's like just natural vegetation, nutritious and beneficial, and the deer can visit that 24 hours a day versus the 5 minutes after a feeder goes off.
Oh, I didn't know what a feeder was. I guess I didn't know it went off.
Oh yeah, matter of fact, there are sounds of feeders going off, and that's in a lot of places. That's how they attract deer.
Oh, I see.
No kidding.
Okay.
Hey, listen, I appreciate you listening to the program.
Thank you.
You bet. See you soon there. All right. So it's time for us to go to a break here in a moment, and I don't see my next caller up there. Okay, well, we'll just go to a regular break here. Right now, this is O'Neill. We'll be back. It's 58 and a half after the hour. I hope you have a pleasant weekend. Father's Day's coming up, and if you'll visit O'NeillOutside.com, you'll see a book there on the website. It looks like this for those of you who are on Facebook right now, and order it. It's 65 years in the outdoors, the people and places that I met and the places that I visited along the way. I know you'll enjoy it, and it's full of Big Green Egg recipes, too. And so there you are. Have a great weekend, and if you're too busy to go fishing and take a kid along, you're too busy. We'll see you guys next week.
Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia.
WSBB FM Doraville, a Cox Media Group station. This is Atlanta's 24-hour news, weather, and traffic. News 95.5 and AM 750. WSB, Atlanta's news, starts now.
Good morning. It's 6 a.m.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.